Eternity Delphi Council debriefings, where the storm has a name. We are your hosts, Lehman, Jay, and Mark. And today we will be talking about the Beta Clearance GM's Primer. But before we get into that, we got an email. So we do encourage you to email us at torgdcd@gmail.com. You can ask us questions. We'll try to answer your questions to the best of our ability. If you comment, which is what this email mostly is, then we will probably end up commenting on your comments. So let's just dive right in. This is from Vincent, and it says, Hello, Delphi Council debriefers. Hello, Vincent. After your analysis of the beta player primer and DC divisions, I wanted to share my idea about divisions and how to put them in more light. Of course, the players are supposed to work by default for hero division. Actually, in my own game, I like that we're part of a big organization thing, so I do bring up the divisions in the background, but not that often. Sometimes a player wants to retire their character because they want to try a new one and never got the martyr card, which has been used once so far. So the divisions could be where retired characters go. He has a little quote. Remember Ombre, the weird science hero? He's worth the Archimedes division now. Boy, those guys are doing a great job. Also, when a new character joins the group, like a player did use the martyr card, which division he worked for can be a question you ask during creation. Marathon is an obvious answer for a vehicle specialist type, Omen for psionic, etc. You don't know which one? Go read the beta player primer. In my Cosmiverse, we played the Gen Con adventure, Burden of Glory. As this adventure is about rooting out Stela, I mentioned that they were on loan to Python Division.
Spoilers.
Yeah, spoilers. When spoiler Rex Steele came to brief them, he said he was from Marathon after some troubling revelations. During the exploration of a wonder, we ended the session with a debriefing, and the Storm Knights agreed to Quinn Sebastian's plea to keep a lid on what they discovered. So Quinn told them, we need guys to keep working on this, though in secret. So how would you like to become a new division composed of just you and some people also in the known, like Thomas Kane over here? They agreed and went on to start when Cosms collide because of some rumors that might connect them to this big secret thing, and now they have to deal with other divisions. So before I get to the rest of the email, we'll go through both Jay and Mark. So Jay, what do you think about like both retired characters going into divisions to kind of give the divisions more meaning to the current players, or say that a Ord, your character background is you were an Ord in another division, you had your moment of crisis, so then now you get put into a Storm Knight team. What are your thoughts on those type of things?
I like that idea. I like, as I said last week, I like having the divisions more up front. And I actually did do something like that. One of my players, his first character was a Nile Empire pulp hero called the Kestrel, who had a jetpack and was like the driver and was supposed to do maneuvers with this jetpack. And he had a ridiculously high maneuver skill, but he just kept mishapping constantly. And the player played him as having questionable judgment. So he made a lot of dumb choices and kind of messed up a lot. So in the game, he got kind of booted down to Marathon Division, and him and the others were just basically ferrying supplies into Scandinavian Isle, which led into one of the Delphi missions. And he just kept screwing up more and more that he was just taken off of Hero Division and permanently moved to Marathon Division. So it's happened in our group. I like the idea of having a little bit more moving around and stuff. So yeah, I'm all for it.
What are your thoughts on going to or coming from Divisions as Storm Knight retirement, as an active, agent type thing, or I hit my moment of crisis and get moved over to Hero?
I kind of I think that's a great idea. It gives the GM a way to flavor their Cosmverse the way that they want and make, whatever story they have to tell, whichever divisions speak to them to say, I got something. That's a cool idea I've got for Marathon, or I've got a cool idea for Hero or something like that. Because everything's happening in Hero, right? And that's if you go play any of the published stuff, it's all Hero Division stuff, except for Soft Cell. But you've got whatever the GM wants to do with that when if your players are retiring characters or you want to just take them over. From the player's perspective, when you retire a character, you kind of do so with the idea that I'm turning this over to you, Mr. or Miss GM, and you get to do what you want to with my character from that point forward because I'm retiring it, meaning it's now an NPC. The character's now an NPC. So what story do you now from the GM standpoint, you got to be respectful of the player's time that they put into building that character into something and manage it in a way that honors that effort and that time because they put their time in it and they had a good time playing it, the character. But the retirement thing into the divisions gives you a great way, I think it's a great idea to build that pull that division off the page and make it into something that fits your game in a much more three-dimensional, much more real, and much more fleshed out way.
Yeah, I like both of the ideas. I've done the retirement thing, as I said many times. My Cosmverse has been going on since Classic Torg, so we don't have the Delphi Council and the divisions, but I do have different groups that work within a Storm Knight organization, and the retired ones kind of do. And there's different jobs for them, similar like the Border Knights are ones who kind of keep a track of where the exterior of the Stele bounded areas are, and watch and plot either the growing or shrinking of realms on core Earth, etc. So certain ones get put into research, depending on what their characters were and stuff. So that one I've used. I haven't used the, hey, I came from Marathon, but had my moment of crisis, and now I'm getting moved over. But I think that's a really cool idea because now the player gets a little more invested into the divisions instead of just eyes glazing over as you're like, Python division does blah, 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 Marathon division does, So they kind of get into it a little bit more. And then you have, when in the adventures those divisions come up of like, hey, Python says, hey, we would like somebody to do this, or Marathon says, hey, we need this message sent over here, those characters that might have been from those divisions, they might know the person, they might maybe give them a bonus or make the difficulty less for knowing the person's motives. Just because they were the same division doesn't mean that they're buddies. Maybe they had some antagonistic thing, but you can bring out more flavor and personal experiences of the past, connection cards, stuff like that. So I really think that that's a cool idea to pull your new Storm Knights from other divisions. Now, I probably wouldn't do it every time. But if I would, hey, here's an option that you can use, and if the players went for it, that would be great because then they're investing a little bit more into the game. So then the email ends with, also, since you were kind enough to answer my questions and elaborate on Cosm creation for a full debrief, so many thanks, and precisely about Malagua. I'm thrilled to let you know that we've played our first full act in the High Seas Adventures realm last weekend. It was tons of fun, and many treasures were found, along with weird pirate vistas of paradise islands and sea monster skulls. Possibilities sparkled. So thanks again. I can't wait for what's coming in year two. May we all keep having fun in our own Cosmverse for a very long time. So thank you very much, Vincent, for that email. And I'm glad you're able to take what we talked about and flesh out Malagwa for your own Cosmverse a bit. That's always fun, as I thought as a game master, is coming up with new realities to insert that weren't necessarily official or just barely given, like, here's a framework, here's a skeleton, and then you flesh it out. So yeah, thanks a lot for the email, and now we will get into the Beta Clearance GM's Primer. Even though it is called the GM's Primer, I think a lot of this is either not necessarily need to be hidden from players, and a lot of this might, I think, just be... especially the first thing we're going to talk about is the possibilities for the Game Master getting... The players should know that that rule exists, otherwise they might be yelling shenanigans or something at the Game Master. So... the Game Master's Primer, the very first thing that it states or that it introduces, is in beta gameplay, the Game Master now has a pool of two possibilities for every player present. They say that these may be spent for any foe, so you don't only have to be reality rated, but for reality ones are the ones that can soak damage. Only reality rated opponents can soak damage, but Ords can use these to gain dice for their boost action, which was named later, but that's what it is. Boost action on attacks or crucial skill tests. It says that it's not something that they're doing consciously. It's the influence of the void itself. Reality-rated villains have their own pools of possibilities as usual. And anybody at any time can use those Game Master possibilities with the same restriction of no more than one possibility. And their suggestion is, in general, use these possibilities offensively, make a miss a potential hit, push a mediocre attack into one that's rolling bonus dice, don't be afraid to take on multi-attack penalties to put pressure on 2 to 3 Storm Knights from a single attack, since the boost from the extra die is a minimum of 10 is going to offset the penalty. So Jay, your thoughts on, and these are known both as GM possibilities and void possibilities because they don't give them a specific name. I usually call them Game Master possibilities, but I know a lot of people call them void possibilities. What are your thoughts on these possibilities?
I like them as a nice little option. I think one of the big things, as you mentioned, is that you still need the reality skill on an enemy to soak, so you can't use these to just have your average Gosspog soak. So it's pretty much just going to be for boosting most of the time. However, sometimes you do get situations where enemies do have powers that can be activated with possibilities, mm-hmm. like yokai or something. So this gives you some of that as well, like some extra juice for those. But the main thing is, because I know some people are going to talk about how they can make things very dangerous. but the thing I found is they tend to just make, if you do use them for soaking for possible, like for actual reality rated enemies, it tends to make combats last a lot longer, in my opinion. So I would, after a while, I just sort of stopped doing that, and I would end an act of an adventure, or even an adventure with still a bunch of GM possibilities that I opted not to spend. So it's not mandatory. You don't need to spend them all. It's just a nice option if you want the battle to be a little bit more dramatic or challenging. There's a few, like, as things got released, there, it does make you question how some things work, like how does this work with nightmare possibilities and, you know, things like that. But overall, they're a nice tool, and I think a lot of it also depends on when you were playing, because a lot of my beta games were before there was an errata on interaction attacks. So previous, like early on, interaction attacks of players call outstanding would just let them make an enemy skip their entire next turn. And that meant I was basically, if there was like a boss, they would never get to boost actions because they were always missing their turns. So the only thing they would spend these on was soaking, which would ironically then make the combat last longer. But then once that errata came, I noticed these became a lot more useful again. I could actually do something with the monsters. So yeah, just knowing when to use them, I think, is a thing. And really, just as a GM, it's all about practice.
So, Mark, what are your thoughts on the Game Master slash Void possibilities?
It's a nice, it's a nice balancing tool to even the tables a little bit. But it's by the same token, you've got your threats that are built a certain way for the way that the mission runs, and then you've got these Storm Knights that keep going, but their possibilities are always the same. Unless they take a perk, obviously that gives them more, but they always get the same possibilities. And as Jay reiterated, you do not have to spend these. They are a resource that you can use. And I would say it's part of the art form of Torg Eternity game mastering to learn when to spend them and when not to spend them. It's your Cosmverse. You can determine how and when you should spend those. You know your Storm Knights better than anybody else. But when they're make when things are too easy and they're just walking through everything, start spending them. Make it harder. Do things that thwart the Storm Knight's actions, because it shouldn't always be, if I'm it's a boring adventure if we just show up and collect XP and never have to worry about anything in between start and finish. The whole point of the game is that there has to be some amount of risk to the characters. Otherwise there's no thrill in the victory, because it's just, oh yeah, okay, we it's like reading a choose your own adventure, and when the choice you made doesn't work out, you back up a couple pages and choose something different until you get to the path you like. And like, what's there's no what who cares? The nice thing about the GM possibilities is that you can sit there and look at the tank that nothing can touch and just start spending possibilities on all the attacks hitting him and put him at risk. Now, some GMs are going to look at this going, well, but that means I'm picking on people, and I don't want somebody to think that I'm picking on them. Well, you kind of have to just shove that voice down and get rid of it, because you're watching your players play, and you can see the players that are having absolutely no danger at all, and then there are other players that are playing that are completely worried about everything. Because you've got some that are just built out as tanks and some that are really squishy. And they're all having fun, right? They're role playing and playing. But there should be some equality of threat there. So, not always. I mean, don't always take the tank that can't be touched and make sure you touch them all the time, because sometimes the players need to be able to walk through that whirlwind of death and not come out unscathed, because that's what they built. That's don't that I'm not saying it's us against them, and sometimes these possibilities can feel like that. But it's, as a GM, you guys have been getting a lot of outstanding results, and I'm going to put a possibility on that roll, and let's see how we do. And you start bumping it up, and that's not, I'm not picking on anybody. I'm not us against them kind of thing. But I've got this stack of possibilities. You make sure they know you've got them. All right, we're playing beta. There are four of you, so I've got eight possibilities sitting over here. My guys are a little stronger, and you're playing with your possibilities, and then toss them out there in points that don't really matter. I would say that in the dramatic events, or in the linchpin events of the story, whatever your mission is, the player's actions need to matter. And so if they make good decisions and they've made all the right decisions, when they get to that turning point in the story, don't use these possibilities to thwart the fact that they've figured things out. It's not what they're for. But it should be there. But they should, by the same token, don't let them roll over it and steamroll it and just, okay, this is easy. It shouldn't be easy. The dramatic encounters should not be easy. They should be dramatic. Use these possibilities to make sure they stay dramatic.
Yeah, I like the Game Master possibilities with a few tweaks since this primer came out. My original Torg Eternity group actually had converted from Classic Torg, so when we started first playing Torg Eternity rules, they were around 25 XP. And for me, it felt like they were steamrolling everything, and nothing I put against them slowed them down. It was like they were a Mack truck going down a mountain and their brakes went out. nothing was slowing them down whatsoever. Threw Ravagons at them, threw, things, and nothing was slowing them down. And then they hit 50, and as you both know, and if anybody's watching knows, I have 8 players, so that's 16 possibilities. And it was like, oh, there is a brick wall at the bottom of that mountain. And they got hit with it. Because I was using them just like, boom, splatter you, because it was like, oh, a new toy. So I did learn how to do stuff like both Jay and Mark said. I don't use them to soak ever, because that just really draws out the combat. If I use possibilities to soak, it's on a reality rated foe, and they use their own possibilities to soak, and then I have them use Game Master possibilities for the boost action or to do whatever special ability they might have. That depends on possibilities. And I'll use them on use them to boost shock trooper rolls to hit and stuff, because I always want my players not to be able to ignore a lot of the low level minions like shock troopers and church police and Gosspog and your basic Eidnos fighters, etc. So, because I've seen so many games when it gets to the end and there's like one or two main bad guys and then a bunch of minions, everybody just ignores the minion because they're like, they're not going to be able to hit me and I don't have to worry about them. So you use those to boost their action and they now are a threat. They might be easy to take out, but you can't ignore them because they're the ones using the possibilities. Another thing that I started doing, because I thought it, at least in my game, with 8 players in my game, going from no Game Master possibilities to 6 Game Master possibilities in one big boom, just really seemed to swing the pendulum a little too far in the other direction. So my current use of them is when they hit 50 and get to beta, I get one possibility. And then for every 50 XP, I get another Game Master possibility. Because the other thing that happened is once they got to about, say, 125 XP, then even having the two possibilities per player kind of flipped it again to where they were just steamrolling things. So I've been doing it at every 50 points. I get one possibility per Storm Knight, and that has kind of evened out a little bit, so there aren't those big spikes and valleys and the, who's going to steamroll who. But yeah, that I think the Game Master possibilities were a cool thing that got put in. Think about how to use them and figure out how it works best in your group, and don't do the soak, because the soak becomes the slog. Unless it's like round 2 and my big bad guy is going to die because he rolled a 1 to soak the first time, so I need him to be able to
I'm going to disagree with you on that. I'll soak when it's appropriate.
I wanted to add, based off of something Mark said, what the beta possibilities, the GM possibilities actually also let you do is make surgical adjustments. Because if you're talking about there being a character who's a tank, who's got a ridiculously high toughness, your options without these are kind of like either I need to design encounters to just interact, attack them into oblivion or something, or just realize that I'm never going to damage them, or give all my enemies weapons strong enough to damage them, but will then completely paste any of the other player characters. So what this lets you do is still have a normally balanced encounter, which is good for the majority of the party. But then if you only spend the GM possibilities on attacks against the tank, you're not picking on the tank. You're just selectively, surgically giving these enemies the extra damage that they need to hit that guy, as opposed to just doing it to everybody. And that can go, for a lot of different things. It can also be used to help contest when the psychic of your party is just mentally dominating every NPC and reading their minds, and spoiling everything at the very beginning. These can help you also get around that. So just think about it. It's more of a finesse tool, not a sledgehammer.
Yeah, that does bring a good point too. These possibilities aren't just a game mechanic, they have a lore reason. You know, the void, it's like an anti-Storm Knight type thing. So doing those surgical strikes is just the void recognizing this Storm Knight
Effective.
is effective. I need to break them. And not just like Jay said, you make a couple of villains that are just gonna, you know, they're gonna cause trouble for the one guy, but they're gonna completely dominate everybody else. You don't want that. So here the void is kind of just saying, hey, I've taken interest in you, so I'm going to give power to the people going against you because of that. So
Well, not even that, too. I mean, this is not just in Dungeons and Dragons or other fantasy role-playing games, you know. Yeah, hey, sue us. Any publicity is good publicity, they say. In a game like that where you have unintelligent threats, a lot of times they just do what they do, right? Well, Torg Eternity, most of the threats you're dealing with are very intelligent. And when you get into a situation where this is a war, this is the possibility wars, and each Chasm is guided by a High Lord that is conniving, crafty, and smart. And if they know that these Storm Knights that have extraordinary abilities are coming against them, they're going to take actions to mitigate that as best they can. So if you've got an ongoing campaign where your team that we've got this great team, Strikers for Good, or whatever you got your team's name is, or an organization's name, and you've been playing for 4, 5, 6, 8, 115 XP, so that's what? 20, 23 acts. They know who they are. They know what they do, and they know how they act. So it's not beyond the realm of expectation for the shock troopers suddenly to have ditched their Schmeissers, and now they're using something completely different that's much more effective against that team. Or you've got a special squad of shock troopers that are scattered about that whenever they hear that your team is in this area, whoop, they go over there. So these possibilities, you can completely go, well, this shock trooper has this thing, and I'm using a possibility on it, and boom. And that's the, you know, there's a story in that. Absolutely. The insidious Wuhan is insidious for a reason. Oh, you thought we all had Schmeissers. Nope, we have ray guns. Here we go.
And that is a good segue into the next section of the GM's primer, Gamma and Beyond, because they say Gamma clearance teams are famous. Such heroes have thwarted the High Lords multiple times, Stories of their victories and sacrifices have spread to every realm and charged countless people with hope and energy to resist. This fame comes with a price. The High Lords dispatch teams of Storm Knight hunters, elite stormers with multiple kills, 100 or more XPs of their own, which I would say make it even more than 100 because you're 200 at Gamma. And then it says each team is led by a named Ravagon with just as much experience. So basically it's saying for Gamma and beyond, sprinkle into your adventure Storm Knight hunters. They've, you know, the first encounter in the adventure is usually just to kind of wet your whistle in combat. Do, you know, take out a few low-level thugs and such. Well, now you've been spotted. And now the High Lord is sending his Storm Knight Buster team to, you know, deal with those pesky Storm Knights who have time and time again thwarted the High Lord's plan. Beyond that, for Gamma, they have that if Glory is played, the Game Master now immediately gains an extra possibility per hero. So it's a... The heroes did the good thing and did the glory. That upsets the void. So the void is shunting off other, you know, possibilities. Instead of destroying them, it's shunting those possibilities off to the stormers to take care of it. Maybe that glory event happens. Now this, you know, you get a possibility per... a new possibility per hero. You might have still have some Game Master possibilities for when they went here, and now that Storm Knight team has a bunch of possibilities similar to a lot of Storm Knight teams that I've seen, where at the end of the act, people have, even though there are some where you get through and you don't have any, there's many times where at the end of the act you have like 6 to 9 possibilities stored up. So this is a great way to off balance those. So Jay, did you have anything to say about the Gamma and Beyond rules?
I kind of wish that they had put in some sample hunters in here, because really, okay, first of all, I haven't really run through Gamma. Once the characters got to Gamma, we would switch to new characters. And so we've, like, the characters, my players have multiple Gamma characters, but they've never actually been played as Gamma. And just designing a whole bunch of these 100 XP hunters, really, to be honest, sounds like a lot of work to me. So I would have liked to see some samples that I could
there's
just
drop
in.
There's a book in that. There's an IE book.
Yeah, that's true. There's also, I guess, some good examples for that are in Revenge of the Caradon and some named Ravagons in the Orosh source book. Mm-hmm. I think 100 XP is probably fine because you're making multiples of them. It's not just one person. It's supposed to be a team. And you're going to crunch them like a threat. So you're not worrying about making them balanced in the skills necessarily. And they're showing up when you're already in a fight and having a setback. So like that's the mechanic here, is if you're Gamma and you get a set hero setback, then these guys show up. And if it's a dramatic scene, all of them show up. So how many is that? I don't know. It's kind of vague about it. But so that could really change things. So I think a team of each of them being 100 XP, even though that sounds weak in comparison to the Storm Knight Gamma team, I think in context, it's probably fine, especially if you're juicing them with these extra GM possibilities, especially if you include a core earth stormer with negation and things like that as well.
So Mark, what are your thoughts on the Gamma and Beyond rule? And yeah, I did forget to say that they one appears on a setback, and on a setback and a dramatic, then it's the whole team.
I love the idea of, and as soon as you were reading that, I was like, ooh, designing, you know, these teams, like here's an Aurora team and here's an Isle team and here's a, you know, is that a thing, or is the Gaunt Man because it's the possibility wars, is the Gaunt Man, who's the opposition leader, has he built a team or maybe a couple of teams to deal with your team out of the various cosms? Because I like the rule of two, and so maybe the Gaunt Man has gone to Mobius and said, give me your best guy. I need your guy or gal that does this. I need somebody to counter this. And hey, Thorian, I need one of those spellcasters, one of those sorcerers who can, you know, we've got this Nile Empire mathematician who's just messing me up with all this stuff that he's doing with numbers. I need somebody to screw him over. And oh, you know what? Hey, let me go over to the Cyber Papacy and get somebody who can just hack into the Delphi Council network and screw them over. You know, put this team together just like you've got a Storm Knight team. And if you look at 100 XP and you look at the perks and skills and abilities that you can bounce around on a threat by spending 100 XP to specifically tailor a threat to deal with Storm Knights, you can make a significant threat with that much XP, just picking, like, building a character. And now I want to build four or five of these guys as a team that just show up in a dramatic scene setback. That's nothing that you're not going to steamroll that. You might, in fact, stop what you're doing and turn to face that specifically and ignore whatever the mission was, because that's a bigger threat. One of the things that popped into my head was, hey, we're in the middle of this DSR and oh no, what is that? Okay, we're going to stop this DSR now. And yeah, I don't care if it fails. Yeah, whatever. We failed the mission. How do we get out of here without getting killed by that over there? That's if you can come up with a significant threat that draws that much of your Storm Knight's attention. Oh, that's to me. There's a cool story element there that will pop up and surprise everything and shift where the story was going to a whole different realm because you did not successfully keep the MacGuffin from falling into the hands of Uthorian because the Gaunt Man's Storm Hunter showed up, interrupted what you were doing, and you were in a fight for your life. So now what do you do, GM? The bad guy got the thing that you thought the heroes were going to stop. Wait, I got a new toy to play with. Okay, so now what do I do? That could be really, really cool. I think the number of that 100 XP doesn't look like much on paper when you're talking about a group of 4 to 6 Storm Knights that have at Gamma Tier, they've got 200 XP each, and that's newly minted Gamma Tier, right? If I did my math right, mm-hmm. That's newly minted Gamma Tier. And build one. Go build a 100 XP villain and look at it on paper. And then maybe have him show up and mess around with your Storm Knights and see how. I think you'll be relatively surprised how potent that can be, especially if you put it. I don't care what book is on top. I'm going to take a book out. Oh, Nile Empire. Okay, Nile Empire was sitting on the top. The Set Walking God. So that Set Walking God, the base Walking God, has Construct, Immunity, Large, Relentless. So there's four things if we count those all four as perks. And then the Set Walking God has Lightning Bolt, Tempest, and Multi-Attack. There's 7 perks. So 5, 7, 9, 11, 13, 15, 17. I mean, do math on how much we just spent there. I'm not adding it all up.
I'm not doing it.
Yeah, and you've got more, but I bet you there you still have XP that you still have to spend, have left over that you can spend that makes that Set Walking God better. And the Set, if you haven't played with a Walking God, they're pretty badass all by themselves, right? And you still have more XP that you can spend on that to bump their skills and to bump their abilities and to give them more stuff. That's a lot. You can put that Storm Hunter team The more I talk about it, the more I'm like, how do I figure out how to get that into what I'm doing now? Because that's really cool. I think putting those together is absolutely something that I'm going to have to figure out how to work into. So Jay,
For all those gamma games.
well, I'm no, I dude. So, but here's the thing. If you build one of them and you build them together at like 20 or 30 XP and they show up at alpha tier for one of those setbacks, right? And they get away or they get killed or not. And then at 50 XP, the same guy or somebody with them, you start this storyline that by the time they get to gamma, both teams know who they are. Right? And so you've got this thread going on now. And now a setback isn't just, oh yeah, we lose a turn. No, you can act, but you have new playmates. Can we just lose a turn, please?
No, I like the idea of the Stormer team coming in on a step back, and the glory gives the Game Master some possibilities. So yeah, I like the beta possibilities. I like the gamma possibilities as well as the Stormer team, which then we'll get into encounter boosting. Which it says very likely a group of Storm Knight graduates to beta clearance, but the GM still has plenty of adventures designed for alpha clearance. So basically, this is like how to take this alpha adventure and boost it to make it challenging for beta clearance things. And their first one is just like, and we're talking about specific encounters, not the whole adventure. So sometimes it just says don't let your Storm Knight shine. So sometimes you don't even need to adjust anything. Just let them know that, hey, yeah, when we were alpha, this might have been a challenge, but now we're beta and we're going against these lower threats. So we're just gonna go through them to give the players a sense of accomplishment, you know, that they've hit their beta tier, and the alpha menaces don't really matter anymore. The second one they have is upgrade opponents, adding a couple of reality rated foes to them, give more perks out to some shock troopers, like have one shock trooper or two be reality rated, give a couple different perks to other ones. Mark had mentioned earlier, give them better equipment. They throw down their Schmeizers and pick up some more potent stuff. The thing that they recommend that players love requisitioning is law rockets. So they're like, give them some law rockets. And it says a combination of all three elements is especially effective, and give the Stormers names. Even if they are taken out, they are likely to survive again.
By a
And
little
as
bit.
Mark
Let me check how much homework I have to do.
had,
Try making new promises.
who's that?
That was my daughter
It's not
running
me.
through, and I don't know who she
Okay.
was. Yeah, she was coming down
Okay.
the stairs. She just got home, and she's on the phone doing stuff.
Okay.
I don't know.
No, I was like, is
Sorry.
interference happening? Is interference happening?
No, that was my daughter trotting down the stairs.
Okay. But it, as Mark had said, giving those Stormers name, making them connected in an antagonistic way against your Storm Knights is a nice, cool thing. Then, so let's go over these first two, Jay, for your just don't boost the encounter or do
That's
boost.
the voice of who you saw.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Don't is actually a good one, because this is something that I noticed a lot of GMs have issues with, and even DMs. Back when third edition D&D came out, I remember that in the CR system and everything was designed, they in the Dungeon Master's Guide suggested that there should be multiple encounters that are way below the encounter rating of the party. so that there are some easy fights. But I have played in many a campaign with Dungeon Masters who seemed to think every fight should be a nail-biting, we're-gonna-die affair, which those games are not actually really designed to make. So really, all they were is, here, have a ton of experience. So, and then we would just all zoom and gain levels super fast. And they do make a big point in here about, you don't gain XP in Torg Eternity for killing monsters.
Right.
You get experience for finishing acts. So you don't want to basically turn every combat into a long slog. I've had many beta combats, and very quickly, when a horde of Vikings was running at the Storm Knights and they just got taken down by automatic grenade launcher fire and were blown apart before they could even get anywhere near them. And you know what? That's fine. When, you know, a dragon gets interaction attacked into oblivion and killed in two turns, that's a different story. But when it's the bunch of Vikings, yeah, you know, let them hang loose there. So that is something. And they make a mention in the primer about the more slog or like just long battles you have also gives players more of a chance to sculpt their hands, which means by the time they do get to the dramatic fight at the end, they will have built god hands and probably finish everything super quickly. So you really don't want it to be super you do want some just easy fights. You can almost narrate them, which is something we're going to get to a bit later. Upgrading the opponents, I mean, I don't know, it's just, to me, that just seems like, yeah, duh. Like, it's pretty obvious, you know, give them better guns. Just keep in mind that in combination with the GM possibilities, that also giving possibilities to a few reality rated characters is going to make things a little bit more complicated. And these guys will possibly be able to soak, which might make things take longer. And if you're not already using all of your GM possibilities anyways, then there's not really much point in making them reality rated in the first place. So I personally would lean more towards like elite shock troopers, you know, just slightly better versions and better equipment. Or what I often would do is I would just, if I do want to upgrade them for a beta threat, I would just take the alpha threat. I would increase all of their attributes by 1 point, and then I would increase any of their like their important skills by another 2 points. And now they would be a beta threat in my book, which we'll come to later is kind of the case, but not really.
So, Mark, what are your thoughts on the don't boost the encounter and the upgrade your opponent's options?
On don't?
Yes, the like sometimes you just don't need to increase an encounter, as Jay and I.
Correct. Well, so yeah. So, sorry, I kind of. Anyway.
Yes.
as Jay said, and as Liam said, Torganized Play has discovered this, that alpha threats are just as likely to be they are capable of threatening beta characters. They're not the pushover. Just because you're a beta character and it's an alpha mission doesn't mean that it isn't going to be harder or difficult or challenging. Dice explode and bad things happen, and ones are a thing. So, you know, you can have a confluence of really bad stuff happen that's already all of a sudden your beta Storm Knight is in great jeopardy in an alpha mission. Sure. Your threats are, there is a great value in the Storm Knight who has spent, or the player who has spent XP wisely on their Storm Knight, getting to use the cool thing that they built their Storm Knight to do. You've built a Storm Knight to have high interaction skills and get players' calls against mooks and watch them get taken, as Jay said, get taken out by automatic grenade fire. That doesn't happen if you bump their maneuver from a 7 to a 12. It only happens if your Storm Knight can get to a 17 on a 7, and then all of a sudden those three guys that she attacked against maneuvered them into the grenade fire or the pit or the cliff edge or whatever it is. Now they're out because she did well with her maneuver roll. And if she built her character to do that, and she's been looking at, you know, wisely going, oh, those guys have a low maneuver. This is my chance, and I have cards in my hand to make this happen. Boom, here we go. That's the fun of the game for the player. They built the character to do it. Let them do it. Now, the same token, everything should not be dumbed down. As Jay was pointing out, the CR rating, building something they can slog through quickly, players love that, right? The melee character likes to use whirlwind attack and not take the -2 and hit three or four guys and cut them down and cause a wound to all of them and then watch you, the GM, delete three or four mooks off the board. That's incredibly satisfying from a player standpoint. I mean, really, you watch, you know, there are 15 of these guys out here. I just rolled an attack and four of them. Boom, 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 boom. Mm-hmm. I'm effective, right? Even the character that's built, like I've got a leadership character that is not a combatant at all. He does leadership stuff. But he's got a Glock 19. He's got an AK-47. And when the right cards are in my hand, if we're up against mooks, I'm like, okay, you guys focus on the reality rated guys over there. I can handle the mooks. And so I will go and I will take out two or three mooks each round until the six are whittled down, or the eight or whatever. And now I'm contributing. I've taken, as Liam was talking about, you know, people ignore, Jay was saying, ignoring the mooks because they can't really hurt me. Well, they have to be dealt with, because dice explode. So now I'm over there doing that with my guy with the Glock, and I'm contributing. But I built him that way, and I put points into his fire combat so he could do that occasionally. He's not wading in against, you know, Gospog of the Fourth Planting. He's, I know you guys handle that. I'm back here doing my leadership thing. But that's, yeah, absolutely there. So there are, and we'll get to how to increase tweaks that we can do to increase encounters that challenge beta tier. But an alpha tier mission is absolutely something that you can still run for beta tier characters. I would hesitate to do that on a 75 plus.
Yeah. Beta table. Covers a range.
It does. It does. Yeah. Newly minted beta up to about 75. Alpha tier missions are still good to go. Once you start getting into that 65 to 75 XP range, now you got to take your alpha tiers and you're going to have to increase them into beta, or it's just, they're going to steamroll it. And there's no chance. There's like, just here, tell me what happened and give me my XP. And that's because nobody likes that. That's not fun for anybody.
I'll just add the little asterisk if you like the large groups like me, it's very interesting. I have had 125 XP Storm Knights go on a brand new alpha mission and have people died, not by martyr cards, because of the Game Master possibilities and the 5x Storm Knight minions. Who, you know, when you have 5x8, that's right. 40 minions rolling. And again, there's those things that you can do if you, you know, combined an action or one at a time, you're going to get some explosions that can't be ignored.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff like that. So I have had it where I haven't changed anything. And just with my Game Master possibilities and those extra opponents by the time, you know, X mini per Storm Knight have evened things out. On the flip side, I have had 8 alpha Storm Knights go through beta adventures without changing anything because I don't get the Game Master possibilities. And with 8 of them, That's double the amount of actions of a normal four Storm Knight group. So,
and cards and possibilities.
And cards and possibilities and stuff. So that has evened out. So if you like the big stuff like me, put them into any game. And you can probably get through it with minor or even no adjustments. But we're going to move on to the next suggestion, which is quick combat, which is basically just if the game master feels at any point like this is child's play for the Storm Knights, but there might be some type of it is a threat, but it's trivial, as it says here. The combat is just for flavor. It's a trivial threat for anybody involved. To just have everybody choose a skill to test, but it has to be a different skill. Roll, determine what your end number is. The game master is going to set a encounter difficulty, and then if they fail, you have that character suffer a wound and draw a destiny card. If they succeed, then they gain a destiny card. If they get good, they gain a destiny card. If they get outstanding, they get to learn some type of plot point. But basically, it's more or less just everybody roll, and if you failed, you get a wound. If not, you either don't get anything, or you get some knowledge or a card or something like that. And let's move along. So, Jay, what are your thoughts on the quick combat?
I haven't used it in Torg specifically, but I've used it in other games, and it's very handy. I know it says for trivial threats, but I would actually also potentially use it for threats that might even be difficult, but are going to take forever. And if it's a more difficult threat, then the difficulty number of this test is going to be higher. I would only really use it if time is like a serious issue. If you have like a 4-hour window, and especially if you're running a con game or like a Torganized play game or something like that, and you have to be done by a certain time, you might want to do this instead. Something like this kind of led towards the operations book, which is slightly more involved, but not by much. So that's another kind of option there too. But it's a nice option to have, but I wouldn't overuse it, because then it's going to start feeling like you're playing a different game that's maybe not entirely built for it. Mm-hmm. The other big thing they mention is you don't have an action pool, so you can actually just use any of your destiny cards on it. So that kind of also helps it. If it's already a trivial combat, you're probably going to succeed.
Mark, what are your thoughts on the quick combat option?
I am not a fan of the quick combat option. And I say that, and then I'm going to offer you a couple of things that I do that sound very much like quick combat, but just a little different. I don't like declaring this, whatever this combat is, trivial. From the standpoint of a writer, if you're writing it and you're writing it as a trivial encounter, don't write it. Write it as something challenging or for a reason. You've got to work in our situation. You've got a word count. Don't waste it. Make it advance the plot. So to me, trivial is a waste of space. From a home game, if you want to use quick combat, knock yourself out. That's what I typically will do is if the players are in a combat, or they've started the combat, they've chosen to go to battle, and we've gone to hand and pool, and we're flipping drama cards, and it just appears like they're mopping the floor with these guys, and we're not really having fun. We're just tediously trying to get through this, and they're trying to limit the amount of resources that that the only question is, how many resources do we have to spend to get through this fight? We are going to get through this fight, and we are going to kill the mobs or be victorious or whatever. Then what I will do is hand wave. This is okay. You guys are going to, we're just going to call it. This one's done. You guys are going to win the battle. They have to have expended some amount of combat costs you resources. typically. If you're in a fight, there are very few fights that I've ever run where players have not spent anything, cards, possibilities, anything. And Jay is absolutely correct. If you're on a time crunch, quick combat or something, that's the only time I do it is if I'm looking at the clock a lot. Other times I will declare, hey, if you guys want to skip this combat, everybody throw in a resource of your choosing, and we will declare the combat won. And that way, if you got a hand and you're like, I've got four cards I like and one card, three cards I like and one card I don't, discard that one card. You've given up a resource or a possibility or whatever. You've given up a resource, so the combat, you've won the combat. We saved all the time, but it cost you a resource. If you want to take a wound, you can take a wound. And then we have, the first aid or whatever. My players don't like that on occasion because, Liam mentioned or Jay mentioned earlier, you get the opportunity in those combats to sculpt your hand. You gain cards, you lose cards. Well, if you don't actually go participate in the combat, you don't flip the drama card and see what the approved actions are. You can't do the approved actions to get cards. And sometimes you're starved for good cards because you got a crummy hand and you need combat in order to get something better in your hand because you know the dramatic scene's coming and you need to be equipped for it. Combat's the only way to do that. And if you don't have combat, now the quick combat gives you the opportunity to get cards. So in that respect, yeah, that's kind of a nice happy medium. Maybe I ought to relook at that and rethink it. But it strikes me as that trivial combat statement has kind of colored my opinion of quick combat. So I'll stop there.
So I'll go ahead and talk about quick combat, and then we'll wrap up this half of the Game Master primer, because we're at the hour mark already. We thought that this would be a fast one. I'll say this. My knee-jerk reaction was the same as Mark, which, is like, no. But then, the more I think about it, I think it can be used for certain things. Because I've often used the fail forward method of, okay, you're going through the jungle, and we're not in an open sandbox campaign. We're in an adventure that we want to get through this adventure. So getting lost is not an option for this game. So somebody roll wilderness survival, and depending on what you get, you get there fast, you get there slow, you get there and everybody has persistent shock and or a wound or something like that to kind of simulate a range of possibilities of getting through the jungle. So in that effect, this quick combat is very similar. It's just saying you have opponents that are, fighting back and not just a jungle or a desert or environment. I could see this if, say, the party's trying to like escape from something. They see a shock trooper patrol up there, and they decide we don't want to fight the shock troopers, we want to run away, but then the shock troopers notice them. So then it's something like, okay, you obviously don't want to do a combat because you chose to run away or try to sneak past, but they've noticed you. This wasn't necessarily a encounter that means a bunch. So yeah, everybody roll a skill, and we'll use this quick encounter to kind of wrap up a escape or, to bypass something that isn't extremely important. And maybe like, and I've been in your games, Mark, where you've done the, hey, it's getting close to wrap up time. You killed the big bad end guy. There's like five minions out there, mooks. It's not worth, doing anything. So perhaps this would be a way to, have the players roll, spend some cards and such, maybe gain something if it's continuing past the very end, if say it's the big bad of the first act in a multiple act game, you know, use this. But it's not as bad as my knee-jerk reaction was the, oh no, this is just this is just too fast too. But no, it's like I've used similar things in other places, so I could see where real life time is counting down, as Jay said. You have a 4-hour period you need to in this adventure. You realize I'm not going to get there, and I'd rather drag out the last, you know, the
and
big
someone
dramatic
just played
scenes.
A dino attack.
Yeah, and somebody
yeah,
just
no
played
kidding.
Dino attack. Well,
dino attack.
Okay, let's do a quick combat. That's a good way to do things.
That might be a great spot, like dino attack or something like that. That might be a great spot where using this solution for quick combat might be a great way to resolve that Cosm card and still award the possibilities and right. and whatnot. I could totally, you know, I'm as you're talking about that, I'm like, oh, Jay, that's a great idea.
Well, I find it funny trying to imagine what having 8 players all having to use different
skills yes.
would turn into.
Yeah, because you can't repeat them according to this, right?
Right, right. Yeah. Everybody has to do different. So, yeah, that could be fun. We'll end really shortly, but the more foes, that's, I think, just obvious, so we don't necessarily need to go through that. But there are some stuff that I think we'll hit next time, because we still got a few pages to go in the Game Master Primer here. So having said that, please do write us, email us at torgdcd@gmail.com. Like the letter earlier, we will read it, answer questions, comment on your comments, etc. But until next time, we hope you have fun in your own Cosmverse. Bye.